Welcome back. We get into some of our discussions here this morning as we try to analyze further, learn from the lessons, figure out what the lessons are in the first instance from our election results yesterday. And joining us, one of three guests we were expecting this morning, a political consultant and director of Caribbean Development Research Services. He's been with us before. As welcome back to our program, Peter Wickham. Good morning to you. Welcome back to our show.
Good morning. Good to be with you. It was very curious and interested to hear the conversations that were going on for the last few minutes. So it was going to be an interesting chat.
The conversations have been going on since last night, actually. They've been raging all night long. And we also have with us here this morning, he's been with us before, and that, of course, Dr. Bishnu Raghunath. Good morning to you and welcome to our program once again.
Good morning.
And I know that you had a pretty late night, so thank you so much for being with us here this morning. But boy, oh boy, tongues have been wagging since last evening when the results started coming in. And when the result, preliminary, although saying 7-7, well, everything just took off. People started having their own discussions. This morning we've been having a raging discussion about who win and if they win and how much they win and if they really win and all of that kind of thing. And more importantly, the voter turnout. With the preliminary estimates given to us yesterday, we have a voter turnout that looks at less than 20% of the electorate turnout to vote on this thing yesterday. Let's begin by getting your opinions on what transpired, the vote and the result. Let's begin with Mr. Peter Wickham. Tell us your analysis of what transpired. A deadlock again, a repeat of 2019. What's your take on it?
Yeah, morning, Satish. And, it's interesting when I listen to the conversations and, you know, the suggestion that is a win or loss, and the question is who is won or who is lost. I see local government in elections as an indicator and a useful indicator of popularity and unpopularity, as the case may be. It doesn't change anything in Trinidad and Tobago. The reality is that the government is still the government, and certainly Kamala Prasad Processa reminded us of that two elections ago, that, you know, it doesn't change anything, but ultimately it's a useful indicator. Against that background, I'm more anxious to see what are the lessons. And I think that one of the clear lessons in it is that the people of Trinidad and Tobago are no more interested in local government than they were before, which is essentially consistent with the logic that supported the PNM's deferral of the local government election. The UNC's argument that there was an anxiety and an interest to get to the polls is not supported by the results of the voter turnout. And you know, for the vast majority of people, it's not high on their list of priorities. They would prefer to go and eat doubles or do something of that type, you know, in time that they have allotted for voting, than to go and vote, because there's really very little interest. And I think that is one thing, that there's really not a lot of interest. And in a sense, if it was a claim made by the UNC, then that would be certainly a claim that you can say they rejected. If we go beyond that and we look at what the body politic is saying, I get a sense that there is some nuance, you know, suggestions, PNM having lost ground in some and the UNC having lost in one, I believe. That is a suggestion that there is a shift or a movement in terms of popularity. But my concern is that it's far too nuanced, because you can't make those kinds of grand assumptions about people's intentions and party movement and the movement of the body politic when less than 20% of the body politic, as you just said, has spoken on the matter, which would indicate to me that, you know, the jury is still out in relation to this whole idea of this nuanced movement in that direction, because some of the things that we could have found may have less to do with the actual change in people's ideas and more to do with the fact that people just didn't vote where one would have expected them to vote because they had something else to do. What else is clear? Clearly, the leadership, if one assumes that local government is inspired by leadership of neither political party is excited the people of Trinidad and Tobago, but we knew this. We knew that there is a rowdy exhaustion and that this is the Achilles heel of the PNM. But we also know that there is an interest in Kamala Prasad Processa, which is the Achilles heel of the UNC. So it's interesting that a few years on, we are back to a situation, Manning versus Pandey, where people are tired of one and not excited by the other. And, you know, the conversation really continues. And my thing is that which of these will make a serious change in terms of their leadership direction? will essentially put that political party in position, because as we look towards the national, which is really the important race, we are in a situation where it is pretty clear that the Rowley exhaustion factor has to be weighed against a level of interest in Kamala Cassatt-Bassessa, who people have already rejected twice. And the assumption is, will that change enough, or will people become so frustrated and exhausted with Rowley that they will say, okay, well, we will give her a chance to repeat? And as I said, it's a low conversation, because we were having this conversation already when you were looking at Patrick Mannon, who was clearly tired and exhausted, versus Kamala Cassatt-Bassessa, sorry, versus Basil Pandey. So those are my broad observations. I don't think it's a win or loss. I think that there are lessons. And I'm anxious to see which of the two political parties will say, look, I have learned and I have understood these lessons. The lessons are suggesting that the public is not excited by me as a party or me as a leader. And are we going to make some fundamental and serious change, because we want to put the next election in our pocket? So that would be my opening remarks.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Raghuram. What's your take? I mean, you were active in the discussions with our sister station, CNC3, last night as the results were coming in. And I'm sure that you would have your own opinion. Victory or not, win or loss, both sides claiming that they won. What's your take?
Okay, so if we go back to the Prime Minister's position, a win is a win, a loss is a loss. I mean, and as far as I'm concerned, the speech we heard from the Prime Minister last night was more of a concession speech rather than a victory speech. Because basically what happened was simply all his appeals for the electorate to go out and support his reform fell flat. If we are told, for instance, that the PNM got and the numbers, the voter turnout, the numbers that we have right now is less than 40,000, just about 40,000 voters supporting the PNM, that doesn't tell us anything about the ability of the PNM to excite the population to go out there and vote. It tells us several other things too, however. It tells us, one, that the third parties did not really make any ground and cannot and have not been able to excite the population to move away from the two major parties. So therein is another issue. And when we talk about the politics, the whole question here is, is this a win or a loss for our country and our democracy as a whole? I think it is a loss for our democracy, our country. Yes, people had the opportunity to go out and vote, but in fact, they voted none of the above. And that is one of the things that what we saw coming out of yesterday's election, none of the above, neither the PNM, neither the UNC, or all the other smaller parties. So if that is, and that is their democratic right, so we give them that. None of the above is their choice, and they went that way. Fortunately or unfortunately for us, they, of course, as we say, a win is a win, a loss is a loss. The UNC is going to go out there now claiming victory because, yes, they had 67 electoral districts before yesterday. Two additional districts were created, and they got those two plus, well, at least they got one out of those two, plus they got two or three seats from the PNM. So in fact, their tally would have risen from 67 to about 70. The PNM, on the other hand, started off with 72. Even though two additional seats were added, they, however, lost at least one. So they're now down to 71. So, of course, from the perspective of numbers, UNC would say they would have increased by about four. The PNM lost one. In terms of the popular vote, the popular vote becomes important in the context of the consideration of aldermen, because aldermen are selected on a proportional representational model. So we will really have to wait and see how that turns out in terms of popular vote. How much, whether the popular vote, for instance, for the UNC was able to capture them more aldermen than the PNF. But of course, the way the electoral map is divided and drawn up, bear in mind that in those areas which are PNM controlled, the popular vote is normally very, very low, and they have more electoral districts. So those are the kinds of concerns. Now, as to the question, win or loss, yes, one party, both parties going to claim win. As I said last night, Keith Rowley did not concede formally, but his speech was a concession speech. Kamala Prasad Bisesa was on a high. Why? Kamala Prasad Bisesa is on a high simply because all the calls for Kamala Prasad Bisesa to give up leadership since 2015, yes, she has lost so many different elections and so forth. And this, however, this result yesterday would have given her some a bounce in a way, because she's going to take it as a bounce, because I didn't lose. In fact, I increased my number of seats and we got the popular vote and those sorts of things, and which will now cement her into the leadership of the UNC. So all those who are hoping that another defeat would have led to a change in the leadership of the UNC as we go into the general election, no, don't expect that. What, however, we will probably have to see is whether or not there are other alliances that are going to develop, and whether not only alliances, but rather whether there could be the assimilation of other parties into some political parties. So, for instance, ILP Jack Warner has said he's going to dissolve the ILP and let the ILP members go back home to the UNC. So assimilation. And then we may now have to consider the contribution of the NTA and whether or not Gary Griffith should maintain leadership of the NTA, or whether the NTA should also be absorbed into this body of the UNC. And if that becomes a reality, then the UNC is going to go in there and say, well, look, there's no longer the IIP, there's no longer the NTA. We're going in there head-to-head against the PNM. Of course, all of that will tell us, will present us with some bigger challenges.
Yeah.
The challenges of leadership in the UNC and so forth. But that's a whole different story.
We'll get to that in just a bit. Our third guest this morning, he was with us prior to the election. I think it was on Friday. We welcome him back. That's President of the National Youth Parliament in Antigua and Barbuda, Kamali Mannix. Good morning to you and welcome to our program here this morning, the morning after our election. And what a discussion we've been having since last night into this morning. 7-7 split straight down the middle as it was in 2019. And, Kamali just came off. I'm not too sure what's going on with him. So probably when he logs back on, we'll get his comments. There was a lot of focus in this campaign by the political parties on their messaging. And the United National Congress adopted the position that this election was a referendum on the government, on crime, on the way the government handled all of the other issues. And the PNM said, this is a local government election. This is about local government reform. I'd like to get both of your views. Let's start with Mr. Wickham on that messaging and whether or not, it's obviously the message didn't necessarily resonate with the population because they didn't come out and vote. So let's get your opinions there. Was the message in the campaign the right one? Mr. Wickham, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I just saw Kamali is just back on, but I'll just answer quickly. I thought the messaging was reasonable. The PNM is trying to reform local government, and it was useful for them to say that, this is a referendum on reform. Governments will never admit that anything other than a general election is a referendum. So if you have a referendum, which is, from time to time that happens, if you have a local election, either in Tobago or in Trinidad, generally speaking, the reaction will be, this is not a referendum on national government, and you do that to guard yourself. So their idea that it's really about reform was entirely unsurprising. One can argue that coming out of the election, you really can't say that either message was right or wrong, because clearly the reform happened, but the reform seemed to benefit the UNC in terms of seats or in terms of positions. It also doesn't appear to have excited the population, because you didn't have an overwhelming increase in people voting. So you could say that there are pluses and negatives. There's really the idea of the reform message is concerned. I think the other message that you talked about, it being a referendum on the government, I think that this has also not been answered. The fact that people haven't voted overwhelmingly against the PNM in terms of the numbers that they were able to identify at the end suggests that clearly there wasn't a no referendum, but clearly it wasn't a yes either, because there were no wins one way or the other. So I would say that both messages were reasonable. Oppositions must say that these things are referenda. However, when the opposition does that, it opens itself up to the possibility that you will not have a clear answer. And the clear answer in this, coming from people of Trinidad and Tobago, is to suggest that we're considering the issue. We are inclined towards looking at the UNC, but there's some issues that we still have to have resolved. So the messages are reasonable, and I don't think that either of them have been decisively answered by the other.
Okay, Kamali's back with us. I was asking the question to get your opening comments, as I did from the other guests, Kamali. Win, victory. Everybody's saying that it's a win. Everybody's saying that it's a victory this morning, both the PNM and the UNC. What's your take? What's your opinion on that position?
It's interesting. I don't know if I can say either party won or lost. Particularly because when you look at the reality of how local government operates in Trinidad, each party now controls the same amount of local corporations. And that is the reality. For a party, in my mind, say, hey, I have won the local government election, it would mean that the party would have to command at least 8 local government corporations. Because then I can say, hey, I have the majority of local governments and whatever power I will be able to execute based on that. It is the reality. And in Tobago, well, Trinidad, sorry. And rightfully so, as my other counterparts have mentioned, was the fact that you saw a relatively low voter turnout. And I'm putting relatively low in inverted commas, taking into account that Trinidad's population is in the millions. And so when you have this basic couple of thousands of people going out, it shows two things. One, are Trinidadians really excited about the whole idea of local government? That's one. And then two, if the party's messages were correct, because of course the narrative of the UNC was secure Trinidad and Tobago, and you saw all of these narratives about stand your ground and the ridiculous statements about empty a clip and all that sort of daftness. And then you saw, on the PNM's end, the whole narrative of their messages was one thing, reform local government, reform local government, reform local government, reform local government. National issues can wait. And of course, local government will help to solve the national issues. But local government is our central priority, reform local government, reform local government. So you saw the reality that I think the two parties' messages are very different. UNC seemed to be focusing more national issues, and the PNM was focusing on one sole issue, which is the form of local government. Now, interestingly enough, what was mentioned before is something that I would observe. I think in many of our Caribbean countries, our electorates don't necessarily have a choice between good and bad, or good and better, or better and best. It's always, this is horrible, but it's not as horrible as this. And that is the reality. And so in this election, you saw that even though there was a commendable effort by both party leaders to call their membership and their party faithful out, you saw them, in the case of PNM, they had conversations with Dr. Rowley. He sat in his little armchair and people asked questions. And you saw similar efforts done by the UNC with their various press conferences, etc. So even with the plea from the party leaders, the national party leaders, to come out. If you party supporters, their own party faithful, really and truly didn't answer the call. And the sad reality of it is, one of my strongest observations was, particularly among the young people in Trinidad and Tobago, many of them seem to not even care about local government. Because for a lot of my friends that I even spoke to, it was like, really and truly, local government doesn't make a difference to me. And so I think this election now opens up a whirlwind of possibilities and sets the stage for an interesting general election in 2025 to come. Because in my mind, if either of these two parties, for example, were to change their party leader with an individual who is young, who is charismatic, who has a relatively little baggage, that party, I see, can take a general election. Because the population is looking at these two individuals kind of the same. Both are aged, both have served as prime minister, both have been into politics a long while, both don't necessarily excite us or enthuse us, but we have to choose between the two. So I think if any of these parties were smart and were to get somebody who is different from what is being presented, then sets the stage for a very interesting 2025 general election.
Thank you, Dr. Agarnath. Your take, the messaging leading up to the vote, the poll, the positions adopted by both. We knew, and we spoke about it prior, that the UNC had adopted national issues at the forefront of its campaign, and the PNM maintaining its local government reform. Was that the right approach? What's your take on it?
Well, it was the right approach for both parties. In the first instance, in the case of the UNC looking at national issues rather than local government issues, clearly that would have been their focus as they look at not this local government election, but as we move into a general election within 2 years' time. So at least start the build-up from now on in. And of course, the UNC has always been saying that they have been starved of resources, and that's why they at local government level they could not have delivered. So clearly, that was the concern. The PNM, on the other hand, was a little bit disingenuous in trying to sell reform when we know, and I think that the population has bought into it, that reform was not coming in the way that the PNM had proposed it. A simple example. The PNM had sold us that when we get reform, we're going to get executive councils, and councils will become full-time councillors and so forth. Once we went into this election, and we did not say that we were going to proclaim the law for executive councils and proclaim the bit of the law that would have allowed for executive councils and so forth, we know that that was not going to happen during this term of local government. And when I say this term, this four-year term. So in other words, the reform that the PNM proposed is not going to be coming this morning, or is not becoming within the next 4 years, because we cannot go midterm and tell somebody who has been elected on a part-time basis that you are now a full-time member of an executive council. The population hence did not buy into the whole notion that the reforms that the PNM was telling us, this is what we're giving you, we will actually going to get. So it is in that context that the people did not buy into it. But of course, the PNM could not have gone any other way. The PNM could not have dealt with national issues, because for all intents and purposes, national issues would have simply reflected the PNM's failure in terms of providing better infrastructure. And in fact, Prime Minister Rowley actually went and apologized for the bad state of infrastructure, roads and so forth, to the population. So he couldn't talk about that. He couldn't talk about the crime situation, because the crime situation is not being arrested. Rather, it seems to be a runaway horse. So those are the things now that the PNM didn't have any other option but to stick with something that they could speak upon. Reform, of course, again, we all know that the population did not buy into that. So the messaging that we got from both the PNM and the UNC were expected messaging. It could not have been anything else. And it's not only the UNC who looked at the national issues, all the other political parties who contested this election. None of them are focused on local government issues. And therein comes yet another issue, another real challenge for us in local government. Here we were in a local government election, and on all the national meetings that we've had, did we hear anybody from as a local government councillor come and make a presentation, as a local government candidate, come and make a presentation as to what they intend to do and how they intend to do it? No. Did the political leaders allow them to do that? No. So even though it was a local government election, it was treated by the political parties not as a local government election, but rather as a general election build-up into the 2025 general elections.
Yeah. We're going to have to take some messages to take us up to the top and news, and then, of course, we continue our discussion after the 8 o'clock news, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be taking some of your calls as well as we continue looking at what transpired yesterday. Local government elections 2023, the poll is behind us, the analysis, the discussions will continue for quite some time. As I said, some messages, news, and then we get back with our discussions. Stay with us.
This is the Morning Rumble with Satish Mahabir.
Three and a half minutes after eight. Just to let you guys and girls know, I'll be taking you all the way until 12 noon this morning. Yeah, Govin will be out on location. I'll be hosting you guys and girls until 12 noon. So our conversations will continue way past 9. We do have our special guests with us. Let's take a couple of your calls before we get back into our discussions. 627-3223, 625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning to your two erudite guests. Gentlemen, I trust you are hearing me. Now, I know that you are discussing results of the election within that context. And let me just say, by the way, I'm surprised that Dr. Raghunath, who confirms that the PNM only got 45,000 votes, when he knows that those are just preliminary results. And what happens is that when the election tabulation is done, the parties are separated by no more than 2,000 or 3,000 votes. Those are just preliminary results, Dr. Raghunath. But you see, one of the main question I want to ask both of you gentlemen here this morning is that we in this country continue to discuss politics without discussing economics. So when you talk about how a party can provide and how they can perform and what they can do, they cannot perform without money. It's as simple as that. And the reason why we do not have any money, it is because of the construct of our tax system, where white-collar criminals steal $30 billion from this country annually. You have a situation also whereby people are telling you they want the best of the best, but they're telling you that you should not pay property taxes. How can you discuss politics without economics? What would the result be? So I listen to your comments, gentlemen.
All right, thank you so much for your call, Eric. We'll get to those in just a bit. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to the gentleman that you have there. I heard the Dr. Raghunath made a statement that PNM, what they promised cannot happen because...
Where are you calling us from?
From that area.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. 627-3223-625-2257. I think I probably missed Wickham's view on some of our calls in just a bit. Let's see if we have somebody else. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Somebody might have been for Lennon, I don't know. 71,000 votes as opposed to just shy of 46,000 votes. Suggests to me that the UNC is going to be popular with any of these corporations that's 50-50. The only other criteria you can look at is the popular vote. It's suggesting that the PNM, even though they're in government and have the resources of the country and the questions of the country and the benefits, have not been able to maintain support. Nobody, and less than 20% of people have come out and vote. suggested to me that people no longer believe in this local government thing. They don't feel that it's really for any change that, and that's why people are coming out, because they don't see how it relates to any improvement in their life. And the corner before we're talking about the economics of this country is in the hands of the politicians, so every solution that will require a political solution, then obviously politics has to be what is discussed. Because it is the politicians who dictate the policies, the economic policies that we have to go going forward. And what they should be asking is, even though oil and gas, as it is, not generating revenue, what are all the additional revenue we're getting from ammonia now? Like 10 times what we anticipated. Where are money going, Evan?
Thank you so much for your call. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Satish. Good morning to your esteemed guests. I'm Mr. Qep. Gentlemen, over time, I sense as though many members of the electorate feel as though they have been denuded, have been stripped of power, so to speak. And I think that a concerted effort to re-empower, if I want to invent a word, the electorate could go a long way towards encouraging more persons to feel compelled to cast their ballot in upcoming elections. One of those tools, or two of those tools that I think are imperative, are the right to recall, and as I've said in previous occasions, I have no problem with it being used on an experimental basis in the local government capacity, and also a set date for election. A lot of persons said last night, it's totally unfair for one party to have knowledge of when the next election is and the other parties don't. And from that, I think the electorate can gain a lot of power from just those two tools being placed in the toolbox, gentlemen. I'd like to hear your opinion. What do you think? I thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, I'm taking you all until 12 noon today. Hello, good morning.
Good morning again, Satish, and good morning to your guest, Princess Tong. Satish, I would love to hear your guest's thoughts and opinion on this low voter turnout. In my opinion, nobody won. If they win in a loss. Because this low turnout is, to me, is an indictment on our politicians, our parties, our leaders. I mean, this is historical. It's the lowest voter turnout we have had since we have in local government election. And if I was in the leadership of the two major parties, I would be very, very concerned and disappointed about this turnout. And the question is, one of your callers, Eric, talking about politics and economics. I want to add in to that, again, your guest's comment. What about governance? We talk about politics and we talk about government, but we're not discussing governance. Where is governance in Trinidad and Tobago today, and what is the impact of governance on local government, et cetera, et cetera? What about constitutional reform? What about real empowerment for citizens? I want to hear your guest's views on these issues. Thank you, Princess Town.
Thank you for your call. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, and good morning to your guests. The PNM, in fact, the Prime Minister campaigned on the local government reform. In fact, it was based on that and the property introduction imposition or enforcement of the property tax. I am saying you have such a low support in terms of almost 45,000. Less than 50,000 people. I want to know whether they have been given the all clear to go ahead and impose the property tax as well as the reform that they spoke of. Because I'm saying that they seem to have had very little or no support for the property tax and the reform which they touted on the campaign. In fact, the Prime Minister's campaign, you remember the conversation, it was based primarily on the local government reform and the introduction of property tax. I want to hear your views on that, whether they have the mandate to do it now. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call. Well, we were told the property tax is coming, and it's par for the course. It's on its way, and there's not much that anybody can do about it at this point in time. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Satish. Who there, Mr. Bratner?
We have three guests with us here this morning.
All right.
Bishnura, okay. Doctor.
All right. What I'm saying is, last night, I was surprised what that on the result, yeah, because what happened, the kind of figure people had and kind of poison people had against the PNM, I really thought they would have won by a overwhelmingly. At least about, I thought she might have taken about 9 corporations or something. But it was surprising, but people still didn't realize Jack Warner and Mr. Griffin didn't make no impact at all.
Mm.
And it was so embarrassing that someone had to remind you to thank them. So they asked yourself how important them was to share the company in the first place. All right, thank.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call this morning. 627-322-3625-2257. We'll take a couple more calls, get to some of your messages before we get back into our discussions with our guests here this morning. I see we have you via our messages. One saying, good morning, I must congratulate the caller from Prinsestown. I'm wondering how many of the PP electorates retained their deposits. We have another one here. The results of the elections reflects a disgusted electorate. The majority of people who have not voted have sent a message that they're not satisfied with both the mainstream parties. In my view, the population is looking for a new party. The core voters who voted have given false hope to their respective leaders, who continue to be deluded. People, by staying away, have sent a message. However, neither the government nor the opposition should ignore the dissonance. Such dissonance eventually works towards social disorder. Thank you so much for your message. Somebody sent us, in polling station, Kyrenee Savannah, 4-9 voters. 129 voted for UNC, 8 independent, 3 PNM, 1 rejected. 141 voters out of 409. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Okay, caller, you need to lower down the volume on your radio.
All right, that's fair. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
What info, Mom, Davide? I spoke to some people there who were telling me that they're not going to vote for the local, because if the vote and the himself, whoever, when the PNM will still be there, and they will have to vote in the general, so they're not going to vote. So they will go and vote for the general election instead.
Mm.
So that's the reason why they didn't go. And I spoke to plenty of people, and that's what they say. So that's why it had a appeal, it had a low turnout, because the local election, the PNM would still be there. I would have said. But I went and vote because, yeah. And this is what they say. So thank you.
Mm, okay. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, because that's one of the things that we need to try to analyze. Why did people not go out to vote? Another message, one saying, good morning. Generally speaking, the sycophants voted as expected. Good morning. Just look at how many votes UNC got compared to PNM. Another message here. Seems like bragging rights is what local government elections. I support the merge of local government and general elections. I'd suggested this morning, I'll probably get a comment from our guests this morning. I am of the opinion that yesterday's local government election exercise highlighted how irrelevant local government is, at least the election, in the minds of the citizenry. And I'd suggested that to get away from all of that, because it costs us millions to stage an election, and plus the millions that we spent on the campaign, we should tie both of them into voting on general election day, change the term of the local government to 5 years to run concurrently with general election term, and everybody vote one time and get it over with. Hello, good morning.
Yeah. Morning, Satish.
Morning.
One of my concerns was that I heard Kyrenee Central was saying that people had a choice that they could vote for whoever they want to, because there's so many people that they could choose. But in my area here, when I went to vote, all I see was PNM and UNC and the ballot paper. It didn't have nobody else. So, you see, so maybe I'm just saying, maybe some people might be just folding paper, pretending that they vote and just hand it in just so.
Well, the thing is that the smaller parties, if you want to call them that, didn't contest all the areas, huh?
Okay.
So you would not have seen them across the country.
But then you would think that a big area like Kyrenee, right? From Kyrenee, from by the bridge, go all the way to Kelly and go all the way down to that area. That's a big area. You would think that maybe that area might be one of the areas that you'll find other candidates. You only find two candidates alone.
Mm. Would you have, I don't want to ask you your business, I don't know if I should. Were you looking for somebody else to vote for?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, caller, thank you. I'll leave it right there because I really don't want to ask you on the air who you vote for, who you wanted to vote for, and all that kind of thing. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish, and honorable members there. My political philosophy is very clear. If you vote for the UNC, you want the people to control the government. Right? If you vote for the PNM, you want the PNM to control the people. And these are my views, and I've done this after careful analysis. Because the PNM has never made a law to protect, defend, or expand our democracy. While the democracy we have today is because of the UNC. Would you like to comment on any of those who speak today? Thank you.
Yep. Thank you so much. We'll pose the questions. Our guests will get, they'll be back on from around 8:20 this morning. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish. Good morning. Your callers and your guests. I had called you a couple of days leading up to this election as an independent-minded voter, trying to share our point of view in terms of the election. And when it all came down to it, I chose not to vote because there were two options in my area, and neither of those options presented any real platform on related to policies on local government that I found made sense or was worth voting for. On a higher level, the parties were very transparent, as far as I found, with the lack of a proper platform. I mean, you all have been discussing it all morning. Everything that you're saying is what they campaigned on. And both of the major parties missed the mark in terms of broadening their base in talking to persons like myself. And the emerging parties also, one, basically sold themselves out because of expediency, and the other one, after 6 years, still does not understand that voters like myself, we're not looking for a messiah. We are looking for an option that can really offer governance and innovative thinking. So when we look at the basis and we look at the data, people like myself understand that we're not going to choose the lesser of two evils. We will show that we are looking for another option. And I do think it is time that persons like us enter the politics and bring new energy into the politics and provide the 70% of voters with a different option, and not one that is going to simply say vote for me because you don't like the other parties. So this election landed exactly where many of us thought it would. It's not a surprise to us, and I think the electorate has spoken quite clearly about what they're interested in taking the time to support or not.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. I don't know about this thing about new people coming in and new blood to excite the electorate and all that kind of thing. That's chain up. That's real chain up talk, because this population, this electorate that we have in Trinidad, not necessarily Tobago as much, but in Trinidad, we're stuck in our ways. And they talk about they want this and they want that and they want the next and they want the other. They don't want all of that. Those are just excuses that they put forward for not going out of, not engaging and not being a part of the electoral process. Because there are options for change. But they just don't see the options as viable. Where are we expecting somebody to come from? Mars? We have a limited pool of people in this country who want to get involved in politics for whatever reason. Politics has been turned into such a nasty thing in this country that you do have people who can make worthwhile contributions to bettering our country through politics, but they refuse to get involved. because of the levels that politics has descended into. And when you get involved in politics, it's because your political enemy is coming after you and your family and your history from 20-something years ago and 40 years ago and all. And it's nasty. It's disgusting. And then there are many people who find the integrity in public life declarations are cumbersome and they want to get involved in all of that. And then when you deal with the political status quo, you really feel somebody could come in and change that? As entrenched as it is in this country's political landscape, I doubt that very much. So this morning we have a discussion about politics. Country split straight down the middle, 7-7, PNM, UNC, and what is needed to take us forward? What make you think anybody wants to go forward? Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Okay, you're going to have to call us back, unfortunately, because the quality of your call is terrible. We can't understand what you're saying. I'm sorry about that. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Satish. Again, Princess Tong. Satish, there's a scenario I would like to hear your guest comment on. You know, we have, for the older men, it will be based on percentage of votes received by the various parties. Now, something is very interesting is developing in San Fernando, if you have a 6-3 or whatever it may turn out to be. But Satish, you know, there is a risk. If, by chance, the one of the parties gets a sufficient vote, they could end up, like the UNC in this case, if they get 4 aldermen or 3 aldermen, they could end up winning the corporation. And, hello?
Yeah, we're hearing you. Go ahead.
And that to me, is a problem, because if we're in a system that is first past the post and then via some selection process, that first past the post system can be overturned, then that is a serious problem now for democracy.
But, okay. But weren't we in high praise of the proportional representation element that is now used with the popular vote to select aldermen? So here's why I don't understand in this country, right? Here's why I don't understand. We want change. We want things changed. Let's get proportional representation. Let's this, let's that. Let the voice of the people. So they introduce this thing now where, because of how many votes you get, the percentages determines the number of aldermen. So now we have a problem with that?
No, Sandy. The point here is our political system is still first past the post. So that is it. You get more votes than your opponent, you win that seat. I am talking here about a situation where people, aldermen, are going to be selected based on overall vote cast, which is going to displace, per se, the first past the post system technically. And that is a problem. Yeah. That's a different thing I'm talking about here now.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much, Princess. Now, let's get our guests back into our conversations here this morning. And I'm sure that they've been listening to much of what the listeners, the callers, have been saying to us. Mr. Wickham, there are a number of issues that people have raised. I'm sure you were listening to some of them. Among the most prominent is governance, the impact of governance on local government and empowering citizens, and citizens feeling that they have no power in what's going on, and that's the reason, or one of the many reasons, why there was this low turnout yesterday. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, the analysis is correct. Citizens don't. Local government is always been an odd creature in Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica, through the other islands. It is meaningful. Well, it exists. I would say in Tobago, it's meaningful. In Trinidad, it is considered meaningless because the councils don't really have power to do anything significant. Of course, we should return extensively on this issue at the academic level. But, you know, local government is in bad need of reform. One of the real reasons it's in need of reform is that, yeah, they don't have any power. So part of the reason that citizens don't vote in it, because they realize that it's a waste of their time. As they said, they could as well go and eat doubles instead, because it's not something that's going to change the world. It was hyped up on this occasion as a tool to send a signal to the government. And certainly on other occasions, it has been used in that way. But I think that the analysis is on point, that it really is not meaningful. It doesn't empower anyone. The councils don't have serious access to money. They're still dependent on national government in many instances. They don't have access to independent. And certainly while the reforms were intended to give them some independent source of funding, so perhaps they could be meaningful. We realize that, you know, this isn't really going to happen. So ultimately, it is, you know, we're back to square one. So, yeah, I think that that's a correct reading of the situation.
Mm. One of the other elements that there was a lot of focus on, these alliances that were forged prior to the vote itself. And we had two major ones, and those were between the UNC and the NTA. That's Kamala Pasad-Biyasa's political leader and Gary Griffith as political leader. And then we had another one between the PEP, Philip Edward Alexander, and, of course, the Farmers Association, Reunited Farmers Association, with Devika as the lead there. But it does not seem as though the alliance has made much of a difference. What's your take on it?
Yeah, no, the alliances, I would say, were dead. You know, they haven't moved the needle significantly, and the presumption was that they would have. Frankly, I'm not quite sure how one could expect a national party, which is like Gary Griffith's party, and certainly the national parties, could make that significant an impact on local government. And I have questioned the logic of what Kamala Pasad-Biyasa was doing. My sense is that it was a surrepilling effect. She was trying to create a distraction and to generate a little bit of interest for the short term. But now she is saddled with these two political entities that she's going to have to look at going into an election with. I'm not quite sure how an accommodation with Jack Warner is going to be of any benefit to her politically. Certainly, Gary Griffiths might, you know, it may help him in the city areas. But the fact is that she's not going to break through politically in those areas anyhow. So try as she might, I don't know that Gary Griffiths is essentially going to be bolder to get to her getting into the slightly more northern areas of Trinidad and Tobago. So I don't think it has happened. It hasn't helped. It hasn't made a huge impact. It wasn't the splash that was expected. So certainly they haven't moved the needle. And I think the question now will be, what role will these two entities play in the national election coming up? And whether she may very well have just taken on a liability in that she now has to present a united front with someone like Jack Warner, who is politically wounded.
Yeah. Dr. Agarwal, what's your take? We were speaking a lot about alliances and the impact those would have. It doesn't seem as though there was much of an impact. What's your opinion?
The UNC has not been, well, has not been able to get significant mileage from the alliance with the NTA. Because, I mean, if we look at what has happened with the NTA and their numbers in their showing yesterday. However, the NTA remains a critical player. And what Kamala Pasad-Biyasa projected even before the start of this election was simply that she, probably at the start of this election campaign, was that she was welcoming to the UNC all alliances in order that they take on the PNM. I must say that, and I will repeat this, that Keith Rowley played a masterstroke when he announced this election way back at early June. And his masterstroke was simply one when he put the nomination day as the 26th of June, which was 7 weeks ahead of the poll, when nomination day is normally 3 weeks ahead of the poll. And the reason for that 7 weeks as opposed to the 3 weeks was simply to prevent alliances that we saw coming up. Because had the UNC had that extra 4 weeks, chances are they may have tried to form alliances with other entities as they move forward into this local government election. Having said that, the big question now is, where do we go from here? And when we ask the question, where do we go from here? That question now comes, what is the status of the NTA? Jack Warner has already said the ILP is going to dissolve itself and let the membership of the ILP go back home to the UNC. Gary Griffith was part of the People's Partnership in 2010-2014. And to that extent, Gary Griffith has always been one of those who has been aligned to the UNC. Now, question, based on his showing yesterday, based on his party showing yesterday, the big question for Gary Griffith now is, can I stand alone? Or does it make sense that I maintain my independence as a political party and simply have an accommodation with the UNC. Or if I am to really move up in the politics and really get somewhere in the politics, I need to be in government. And in order that I need to be in government, if the UNC has a better chance of being in government in 2025, well, then I have to be part and parcel of that government. And to that extent, question is, will Gary Griffith now have to consider merging the NTA into the UNC and becoming, for instance, a deputy political leader within the UNC, which is a possibility because, again, he has had that alliance with the UNC and in the past, so it's not a difficult stretch. More importantly, a lot of people in the UNC still think that Gary Griffith probably was one of the best police commissioners, and to that extent, they may very well want to jump on the bandwagon. Well, let's bring Gary Griffith into the UNC and could probably be a critical help to us as we move forward. So that's the context now we have to look at. Now, as to the alliances, the other political parties that are outside there, I don't think they're going to try to form alliances.
Hmm.
But the point about it is we now have to, with the UNC, that is, they may form alliances amongst themselves. But as we saw in this election, they could not really excite the population. So I don't think they will go very far on their own, even as an accumulation of all those smaller parties. But the question here now is really, where does Gary Griffith go with the NTA? With regard to Jack Warner and the ILP, regardless of what people say, Jack Warner played a significant part in this election outcome yesterday for the UNC. Jack Warner, for instance, in La Florissance, Lopino, I think that was the seat. The UNC lost the seat by about 200 votes, I think it was. But that was Jack Warner's home base. But Jack Warner also went into areas like in San Fernando and in Marabella, for instance, where I think the victory that they picked up in Marabella was as a result of Jack Warner's going back down there and going and meeting and greeting the people on the ground. So they cannot discount Jack Warner, and they will need to keep Jack Warner in that alliance with the UNC as we move forward.
Yeah. There are so many things that need to be discussed, because this is from the campaign. I don't know if anybody could have predicted this, even though it was just days before suggested by commentators that we would see a split straight down the middle again. If you listened to the campaigns of either the UNC and PNM, you'd never get that impression that they were of the opinion that this thing was such a closely fought race, or that the turnout would have been as low as it is. Our callers made some suggestions on issues that they wanted you all to speak about. After casting his ballot, the Prime Minister was asked about fixed election dates. And that's a discussion we've been having in the country for a long period of time. Fixed election dates and the right to recall midterm. I want to throw something else into the mix and get your opinions, both of you, on it. The lack of engagement by the voting population yesterday suggests that there is less and less interest in participating in local government elections for whatever reason. People don't see it as important. People say, well, regardless of what the government will be there, it ain't gonna change anything. My councillor still ain't gonna work for me. Whatever the reason is, it's an exercise that was conducted that cost the country millions of dollars to stage. And that's from the EBC's side. Then you have the political parties that engaged in a campaign that saw millions of dollars being spent and the nation being further divided by some of the things that are being said. Now, local government moving from 3 to 4 years, why can't we, or can we, or should we never even consider merging local government and general elections, and have the both elections on the same day, have both terms run for 5 years, so you get away from all of these semantics that you have in between, and in between that you have a right to recall. Can something like that work? Mr. Wickham, what's your take on it?
I'm not convinced. Really, it's about relevance, and whatever has to be done to make the local government environment relevant. If you make it so that people vote all on one day, I think that that would certainly help to get them to the polls. And if they're there, they will probably just vote their ballot, which is what happens in the U.S. So it's tidier, and it helps to get, you know, people there. And as I said, they will probably just vote down ballot, which means that you will have a result that mirrors a national election. You will have a higher voter turnout. And if that makes you happy, then fine. But if you really want to answer the bigger picture, you know, it's really about making that environment relevant to people's participation. And if you look across at Tobago, their local government elections are important and relevant politically. And as a result, people come out and vote. And I think that they have a voter turnout that is comparably higher, and certainly higher than this, and comparable to national elections, because in Tobago, elections see that as their elections. In Nevis, where you have a functioning local government as well, even though it's a tiny state, the, you know, voter turnout is also there higher than it is, or comparable with the national election, and nothing like this, because again, it's relevant. So to me, it's really about relevance, and you can try to achieve relevance by, you know, moving the date so that you force people to vote or participate and get the result that mirrors the national election. Or alternatively, you can do something that makes the Trinidad local elections as relevant as Tobago local elections, and Nevis and other places like that. So that's one of the ways of dealing with it. In Barbados, we had local government years ago. Of course, I appreciate that Barbados is considerably smaller. And one of the reasons that we dispensed with local government is because we realized that When someone in Chaguanas has an issue, is that person really going to go to the Chaguanas Council to have that issue addressed? Or alternatively, do they look to the Ministry of Works in Trinidad, in Port of Spain, and see whether the Ministry of Works can deal with it? You know, is the councillor able to address their domestic issue? Or alternatively, is the member of parliament more likely to be able to do it? And those are the kind of questions that you have to ask and consider whether or not it is still as relevant as it was before, and what are these types of issues which you can impact by local government? Is it just sewage and garbage collection, things of that nature? And is that important enough for someone to come out and vote, especially if they think that the garbage is going to be picked up regardless of what happens anyhow?
Yeah. Dr. Agra, what's your take on it?
Okay, so, I mean, it's several questions in there. But let me start from where Mr. Wickham left off. When Trinidad and Tobago went into the boom in the 1970s, our first oil boom, what we saw coming out of that was the emasculation of local government. In other words, people were told, no longer, you don't have to go to your councillor, you don't have to go to your county council. Come to the central government, and the central government will give it. So we want to build a basketball court in Miaro. Don't go to the municipality. Don't go to the county council. Come to the Ministry of Sport, and we will build the basketball court in Miaro. And that's where the challenge with local government started in Trinidad, when we emasculated local government, so much so that everything was being told, go back to central government. What the government, the PNM in this election attempted to do was simply say, well, all right, fine, I'm going to reform local government and put back power in the hands of the local government corporations and so forth. But people are yet to recognize whether that will be actually done in the first instance, and how quickly will it be done. So that is where the whole question of participation. I have always said, when you look at local government systems in other countries and in other territories, the manner in which it is operationalized makes it relevant to the people. So for instance, if I may go to simply Belize. In Belize, it is a requirement by law that local government councillors have one meeting every 3 months with their constituents, their burgesses. In Trinidad, we don't have to have local government happening local government people tell you straight. The last time I seen the council was the last election. The next time I seen the council is when the next election is coming by. And there's no accountability. And that, I think, is part of the real big challenge for us in Trinidad. People do not see the relevance of local government. I can get up in the morning, I mean, in my area, and I know my garbage is going to be picked up, notwithstanding what. It may not, if they miss a day, chances are they will pass the next day or the next 2 days and pick up my garbage. So definitely my garbage is going to be a thing. Now, but the point about it, there are some areas, particularly so in the rural areas, where local government becomes much more critical than in the urban areas. And that is where you see the higher voter turnout, for instance. So in the rural areas, people depend on local government. For instance, in the dry season, we have to get truck-borne water. People depend on local government for we used to call it 10 days for employment. People depend on local government to make sure that they get certain types of services, and at least where they could get some sort of response from somebody because they're not seeing their MP at all. So it is in that context that people in the rural areas more than usual will go out and vote. In the urban areas, and that's why we have that low voter count in places like Port of Spain and Diego Martin and Sawa Barataria and so on. Why? Because they are close to the center. They don't see their counselor. They don't know who their counselor is. But what they know is that they are close to the central government, and more importantly, the services they rely upon, they get them on a continuous basis. Why? Because, for instance, garbage collection. Let me use garbage collection as an example. Local government corporations don't collect their own garbage. All of those are paid through contractors. Contractors are given a contract for 6 months or for a year. You're going to pick up my garbage every morning or whatever, 3 days a week or whatever else. Regardless of who is in council, that contract continues. So people there's no need for local government. As to whether the local government people themselves are going to maintain the parks and the playgrounds and so forth, well, they may very well do that. But again, it depends on their resources. So this is where we now have to make local government relevant. And we have to bring back people into local government. When I say bring back people, bring back the population to understand the relevance of local government. I'm a local government supporter, having studied local government in all parts of the world. And I think that local government is important. However, in Trinidad, people do not see it as important because they are not encouraged and engaged in participating with their local government to build their respective communities.
Yeah, and we're coming close to the end of our interview here. And I think the question that we as a nation need to answer and probably start a discussion on is, can we get more people involved? And if we can get more people involved, what are some of the things that we probably need to do to head in that direction? Mr. Wickham, I'll ask you that as our final question here this morning, because I think that's one of the more pertinent discussions this morning. Do you think we could get more people involved, or is this just par for the course and we had to deal with it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that you're on the right track just now, and this is an area that the show is far more qualified to respond than I am, because, I mean, I haven't looked at it in as detailed an academic way as he has. He spent a lot of time researching the issue, but, I mean, my initial comments about relevance would be where I would start. So, to me, you do one of two things. Either you discontinue it altogether and you replace the corpses with some other kind of entity that picks up garbage and so on. Or alternatively, you make it more relevant. And that's the kind of fundamental reform that I'm not really competent to address simply because I haven't really looked at it. But the question of relevance is really changed. And I do feel if Trinidadians are of the opinion that it is important to their political development, that you have a local government, then you have to make the necessary changes to make it more relevant. One of them will be an independent source of funding, which I understand is not already on the table. I don't know that changing the day will necessarily be a solution, but that's also a possibility. But whatever you do, it has to be to the end of making it a more relevant institution. Or alternatively, we're going to continue to have elections, which are frankly a waste of taxpayers' time and money, to do all of this and then have a 20% of the population participating. But I appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on this issue, and I'm actually looking forward to how this analysis plays out in relation to the big event, which is the general election of this June, relatively soon.
Yeah, and definitely we'll speak to you, I'm sure, a number of times before we head to general elections. But I want to thank you this morning for being with us and giving us your insight into some of these issues once again, Mr. Wickham.
My pleasure.
It was always nice to have you. Dr. Raghunath, as we wrap up with you as well, your take on this thing, it should be cause for concern if it's not in the minds of not just the politicians but the citizenry at large, that we have such a low voter turnout and that we have this growing disengagement, for want of a different term, with our politics. Can we turn it around?
It's not a matter of can we. We must, right? The question, however, is how are we going to turn it around? Now, one of the things that I've criticized our local government system for is simply that it does not have the autonomy that it requires. The proposals that came from the government for local government reform are all proposals in the right direction. However, people do not trust the central government that they are actually going to empower the local government authorities and give them the autonomy that they require to go forward. And that, I think, is part of the challenge. So that's where we have to start. You see, all the reform proposals that we have passed in law, if we could implement all of them, then that is one place to start where we could start bringing back people engaged in local government. However, we need to do the implementation. And I think that is where the real problem comes in that people do not trust that the central government really wants to empower local government. And that was reflected again in this local government election. It was reflected when who took center stage at the meetings? Not the local government representatives. Because we've always had the problem of the caliber of people. And I'm not talking about now. I'm talking way back in 1987, when under the NER, they had the first local government election in 1987. And the then minister of local government, my former colleague, now deceased Dr. Brinsley Samaru, who was then minister of decentralization, would have told us, why we want reform, you know. But we can't reform with the caliber of people who want to be counselors. And that's part of the problem, because can I give a $1 million to, and I will use one example. I mean, it's probably a bad example, but I remember a counselor who, prior to becoming a counselor, used to sweep the drains. And he could have hardly read and right. But the point about it, he was from the party, he won an election, and he became a councillor. And the question was, can I give him authority to spend $1 million or even $500,000 in his community? And that's where the real problem lies. So we have to start at all levels. We now have to ask ourselves, and this is why I was all in support of local government reform, when the government had said, we're going to make the councils autonomous, we're going to give them authority, and we're going to give them a revenue base, and we're going to make councillors all full-time and so on. And once that was going to happen, I said, yes, that would now put power back in the hands of the people, because then you could hold your councillor accountable and say, don't tell me you can't do this because you don't have money, because you are now a full-time, you are now my full-time employee. You're not a part-time employee to come when your future comes. And that's where the challenge comes in. But I do not think there's any trust that the government is willing to decentralize power from central government to local government. It's all good and well on paper, but there's no trust that it will happen in reality.
Yeah. Dr. Ragnar, I want to thank you for being with us here this morning. It's been a lot that we've discussed, and we have a lot more to discuss as a nation moving forward about some of the lessons that we need to learn from what transpired yesterday as we head towards general elections in 2025. I want to thank you once more for being our special guest here this morning. Always nice to have you.